Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Story Studio. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to the Story Studio, a podcast for an independent publishing company that explores the world of self-publishing, independent art,
fruits, and the future of storytelling.
How's it going, man? Are you okay?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I just need to remind you, listeners, because I've completely forgot. My name is Luke Condor with a K, and I'm joined by Mr.
Daniel Wilcox. Say hello. Hello.
Hello. Okay, I think it's a bit late for us. I think we're a bit loopy. We've just done it, recorded the interview. I've drank half a can of Iron Brew. It's all hell's breaking loose right now.
Half a can.
It's full of
Holy
sugar.
Holy crap, man. Come on. It's Friday. You're fine.
Friday. Yeah. How's the writing going?
It's going good. I'm currently planning and looking at a novella that I'll be putting together, which is an extension of a story that our Patreon listeners will be familiar with. So if you're a Patreon listener, you've got something exciting to look forward to. If you're not a Patreon listener, then get onto patreon.com/HawkandCleaver and pledge for as little as a month. That was a nice little plug. But yeah. Basically, you'll get loads of really good goodies for just £1, £1 a month.
A quid. So this novella you're writing is about crusty things. Is that right?
It is. Yeah. So it's, or I'd say too much, but yeah, it's basically sprung out of the At Sea volume that we had recently for the other stories. A little bit inspired by a book I just finished and one that I think we've mentioned before on the podcast, which is The Troop by Nick Cutter. But yeah, it's kind of, I'm planning on going really gross with it, but I don't want it to be a monster-led story. I want it to be one of those really kind of grimy, this could be a real-world story that really kind of gets under your skin.
Nice. Yeah. The Troop is it's a really great book. In terms of disgusting... Yeah, someone joked that it should come with a complimentary sick bucket. There's points in that book that are just so gross, but like kind of, it's one of those things where I'm always amazed when prose can make me feel physically like that. Do you know what I mean? If it can have such a physical effect.
Yeah, it's the first book in a while that the minute I finished it on my Kindle and it said, "Do you want to review this book?" I just jumped straight on and put a review. And I'm pretty sure in the review, one of the bits I talk about is exactly that, the fact that it's rich, it's colourful, it attacks every sense.
Yeah.
But nothing's left. You just completely, utterly just...
Voided.
But the story's good as well, yeah. The story, it ties together nicely. It's quite... It's not overly complex.
Someone said it's kind of a comic booky story, and I didn't know what it meant at first, but I think what they mean is it's not particularly like literary. Do you know what I mean? Like it's a fairly simple concept and story, but it's just done so well, so neat, and it's so perfectly put together and packaged, and it just is really effective.
Yeah, definitely. It's one I'd highly recommend, and I definitely would like to read more of his stuff.
Is this your big whip, by the way, or are we?
No.
Okay. So what's your big whip?
Wait. How's your writing going? I don't want to be selfish here. How's yours?
Yes, I'm doing NaNoWriMo or NaNoBoozmo.
How's that going?
I'm 30,000 words into the NaNoWriMo. It's going quite well.
You're on track.
I only meant to do this, like, the plan was to do finish this little novella thing I'm doing and then move on to like the next novel, but this novella has quickly turned into an actual novel, like a short novel. I think it's going to commit to about 55,000 words or something like that, but it's in a way it's actually got some bits that are quite inspired by that book, The Troop. I'm trying to, there's a scene I've been writing recently, like the past couple of days, where I'm really trying to get into that gore that isn't just like words on a page, but actually really sort of gets in your mind and doesn't paint everything, but lets you sort of paint in the colours in yourself. And I think that's kind of like what works so good about that kind of gore. But yeah, it's been fun. It's been really interesting and quite exciting to just crack on with some like long form fiction again.
Yeah. Do you have a title for it yet?
No. I mean, I've had various ideas, but none of them have really stuck with me just yet. So I don't know.
That's always the hardest part, I think, for me anyway.
Yeah. Normally I'll have them, but it'll change like so many times throughout the process.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Come on, then, man. What's your big whoop?
So my big whoop is Taylor Swift's new album.
Interesting choice.
Yeah. I'm a big fan. But I wasn't sure what I was expecting because, to be fair, I loved... I don't know how this is going to paint me to people listening now, but the first two songs she released, the Look What You Made Me Do and Are You Ready For It, I very much enjoyed. And I was wondering how the album would match up. And to be fair, I've only had a couple of listens of it, but I know it's a good album because every morning I'm waking up and there's like a random different song from the album just stuck in my head.
Well, that's how you definitely want them stuck in your head. I've listened to it as well, and only because at work we have like an office playlist.
Don't
sort of
justify it. Just accept where
well,
you
I,
are.
I did put it on, but I've got to the point where I keep putting the same songs on. So I am at a point where, because I can't listen to like heavier music at work, I just keep putting Bon Iver on, and there's only so much Bon Iver you can put on before your colleague is like, dude, listen to something else. Yeah, and then I was suggesting some of the lead singer from Bon Iver's side projects, but it wasn't quite enough. So you put on Taylor Swift, and yeah, it's all right. I mean, I'm not.
Yeah.
It's not quite. It's what's that big song that everyone liked? Take It Off, Break It Off, Shake It Off.
Every variation, cake, break, make,
cake it off, make it off,
snake
it off.
Yeah,
yeah, it's all right. It's all right.
It's not shabby.
Nice little choice. I guess my big whoop isn't quite as cool as Taylor Swift, but my big whoop. Maybe I've already talked this one. I don't know. Shudder. Have I talked about Shudder before?
Rings a bell.
So you know we've got like Netflix and Amazon Prime and these various sort of streaming services.
Is this because it was brought up on one of the Facebook groups? Might be why.
It was brought up on the Facebook group, yeah. So there's this like newer sort of form of like boutique streaming services now. So whereas Netflix, you know, will have like every genre a TV show imaginable as much as they can, and Amazon Prime will have their own selection of a bit of everything. There's more boutique ones popping up. So there's one called Mubi, which is the same price, £5 a month, but it's a very select, like a selection. Do you know what I mean? It's not as many films, but they're on Mubi, they're more arty, farty sort of films, more art house and that way inclined. Whereas Shudder is a proper selection of horror movies and thriller movies and that things that are a bit more pulpy and a bit more genre and grindhousey and that kind of thing. So Shudder is £5 a month. You get a free like month trial if you want to try it out. But if you just have a look at the stuff they've got on there, they've got all of like the Netflix horror selection, but then so much more. And like a lot of like classic horror films, a lot of like weird obscure stuff that's kind of difficult to get a hold of and see. So I'm just absolutely loving just sort of going through Shudder selection and watching these sort of insane 70s Italian horror movies where the special effects is kind of dodgy and the story doesn't make sense, but it's kind of like, well, actually, we're kind of watching disgust, but kind of a curious disgust.
How much did you say that was a month?
£5 a month.
Okay.
Yeah, it is really good.
Because you seem to get it's almost a trend, isn't it? When the what do they call them now? Like the loot crate stuff going mental, and they started introducing book versions of that. There's now sort of like horror book things you can get, YA book things you can get.
Nocturnal Book Readers Club, I think, is the one that they always talk about on Bookstagram.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're probably going to be seeing a lot more of these little, like you say, boutique ones popping up for different genres, different styles.
Why don't we put together like an indie novel subscription box? I always thought about that would work in like indie comics. So you have like a subscription box of like a selection of indie comics sent out every week or every month even.
Yeah, that'd be a fantastic way to grow your reader base.
Yeah, exactly.
The only problem would be, I guess, the cost for packaging, but if you can set it up right, you know.
Yeah, if you can get enough people, that's the main thing.
If anyone listening wants to invest in a £1 million idea, again, go our way. We've got some ideas.
It's definitely a £1,000 idea. I think
it is.
I think at least £1,000. But so today we're talking. We've got a nice little interview lined up and primed up for you guys. I don't really want to do the intro bit here. I haven't quite figured out how to do this, Dan. So how do we go into the interview section?
So we had a lovely chat with a wonderful man called Max Booth, who spoke to us a lot about his podcasting, about his experience with his novels and his own publishing company. And he dives a lot into, what kind of stuff does he dive into, Luke?
Stephen King. We talk a lot about Stephen King, which I quite enjoy.
Yep. So if you're a fan of podcasts, if you're a fan of Stephen King, and if you're a fan of hearing the inner cogs whirring on a fellow horror author, then here comes Max Booth. How was that?
Great. Nicely done. Max Booth is the editor-in-chief of Perpetual Motion Machine Publishing, the managing editor of Dark Moon Digest, and the co-host of Castle Rock Radio, a Stephen King podcast. He's also the author of many novels, such as The Nightly Disease, and frequently contributes columns to both Lit Reactor, it's one of my favourite places to go on the internet, and Gummut. I don't know what that is. Also, he lives in Texas. Welcome to the show, Max. How's it going?
Oh, thanks, welcome, man. It's going good. Thank you for having me.
What is Gummut? I've not heard of it before.
Oh, it's a online magazine. You have to pay to subscribe to it. It has fiction columns. It's headed by a guy named Richard Thomas.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know if you know him. Yeah, he did a Kickstarter for it like 2 years ago and raised about $50,000.
What?
Wow. Yeah, it was pretty big. I mean, he has Brian Evanson on it. He had Stephen King on it. I mean,
wow, that's pretty
cool. You should check it out.
We definitely should, yeah.
Yeah.
And you haven't heard of it.
What the fuck?
I haven't either.
What kind of podcast am I on, man?
I'd heard the word. Okay, so Max, I mean, do you want to maybe start us off by talking about something you've, you know, recently read or watched that you're like really geeking out on?
Yeah, I just finished Megan Abbott's You Will Know Me, and I've never read anything by Megan before. Have you guys?
No, I don't think so.
She writes crime novels, and You Will Know Me is the newest one she's written.
I think I've seen the cover floating about, actually, on Goodreads and that.
Yeah, some lady's face.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. But inside is good. A lot of those mainstream presses, the covers are just so shitty.
Yeah.
They play it too safe.
So, in terms of books, I kind of had you down as more of like a horror reader, but I guess, is there any sort of specific genres you like to go to?
I love the read whole, but I think crime is probably my go-to usually.
Yeah. Cool. And it's
intense. I also recently began reading James Ellroy, who for some reason I just skipped completely growing up.
Yeah. And in terms of like visual stuff, so like films and TV, is there anything that you're really enjoying right now?
I'm loving The Deuce on HBO. It's about the porn industry and prostitution in New York in like the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Also a crime show, but more on the whole genre side, I just finished watching the new season of Stranger Things. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah. What did you think of that, Dan? Did it live up to everything you kind of wanted it to?
I think I didn't manage to watch it as fast as some friends, and they overhyped it a little bit, but I thought overall it delivered massively. It was the first show that I've stayed up to watch until the late hours of the morning and since Breaking Bad, and yeah, I think it was fantastic.
So where do you think it sits against season one?
Against season one, I'd say a little bit under.
A little bit under. Okay, what about you?
Only
next?
A little bit. Only a little bit.
I'm curious.
Yeah, I would say the same. I loved the new season, but I think I enjoyed season one more.
I think I.
I think season one had that novelty of. Yeah.
I think I got too hyped up.
You preferred two?
No, well, I got too. At the time, after season two was done, I was so hyped up in the emotions of the final dance.
Yeah.
I was like, this is so good. But now thinking back, now I've had a bit of time.
Pants out
to calm
the
down.
Saddest scene in TV history.
I know. Yeah. Now I've had a bit of time to like let it soak in and simmer. I think season one was just a more intriguing, well paced. It didn't have any dull episodes. It was just so well paced and so well put together. But
yeah,
I think it took a lot of us by surprise too. Yeah. I don't think anyone was expecting it to be so good. But with season two, we were expecting it to be even better than season one.
Our expectations were so high for season two. That's the thing. You need to go in. I need to go into everything expecting shit. And then maybe, you know, maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised.
Well, that's it. If you expect everything to be crap, then you can only be pleased. So
exactly. Yeah.
That's a good way forward. What a way to start this.
Yeah.
But Max Sellison, what is the cross? Because you seem to write a lot of horror. So where do you draw that inspiration from if you seem to primarily digest thriller?
I mean, I don't know if I would choose one over the other. I kind of dig them both, you know?
So what's your origin story then? So what got you into writing in the first place?
I would have to say it began with my dog when I was, I don't know, 6 or 7. I was pretty close to her. Her name was Penny, and she was fucking demolished by a snowplow. And to cope with that, I began coming up with these fantasies of like, the dog and I going on these stupid adventures, and my dad ended up helping me type them out into text. And I thought that was the coolest thing. And plus at the time I was really into like Goosebumps and yeah. Christopher Pike. And it was a natural lead to wanting to write in that genre.
Mm. Yeah. And do you remember the first story? Do you remember like what it was you first wrote?
Yeah, it was. So it was about myself and my dog, and we were in the woods, and we found this strange tree that had an entrance to it, and this fox with a lab coat came out and kidnapped my dog and demanded all these strange ingredients to build some doomsday device.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't know what it was called. Some probably like the fox in the tree.
Weird. I think one
and
of
what
my
was
first...
it that took that? Go on.
I was just going to say something. I think one of my first stories was a me and my dog sort of story as well. I think that relationship you have with your first dog is quite a strong one.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was it that took that next step from sort of those kind of stories into, I don't know if you'd say more sort of serious writing, but sort of later life writing, a bit more pro?
Oh, yeah. Well, from then on, I began writing the whole genre stuff because I also discovered Stephen King, and my main focus just became everything whole. My brothers would show me the most fucked up movies like Dead Alive and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I'm only like 8 and 9 at the time.
Wow.
I didn't really discover crime fiction until I was a teenager, but what led to me deciding like, okay, I want to do this for a living. I think I could do this for a living. And I began submitting things out. I was living in a motel at the time, and I don't know why, but I was watching Death Proof. I must have been, I don't know, 15. And for some reason, I don't think it's that good of a movie now, but at the time I just thought, yeah, this is the best movie I've ever seen. Nothing has ever been written with more craft than Death Proof. And I immediately wrote a flash fiction that was just a big ripoff of Quentin Tarantino's dialogue. And I thought, oh my God, this is a world-worthy, that no one has written anything as good as this thing I just wrote. So I began researching other places to submit it. And I found some website called Storiesville. It's now defunct. It's not around now, but it was basically like what the hell is that website called where you can post things and get critiques? Wattpad.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that. It was a big community where you would post things you'd written and friends would comment. And I gained a good amount of friends from that website, and they also were interested in writing, and we all just took it really seriously, and it evolved from that.
So did you guys sort of like critique each other's stories and then send them out to publications or something like that?
I don't think anyone was submitting them out yet.
Yeah,
none of us were that good.
So
if we were submitting them out, we weren't admitting it because they were instant rejections.
So, how long ago was this, though? Was this, how old are you at this point?
I'm 24 right now.
So, I mean, when you first started writing on the Wattpad equivalent?
About a decade ago.
About a decade ago. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. So, I guess this would be your training montage period, right? So, this is like the bit where you're getting a lot of stuff out. I mean, were you writing a lot at the time?
Yeah, I lived in a motel from ages 12 to 16, and basically all I did, because I wasn't going to school, so all I did was read and write pretty much constantly, and I think that definitely helped improve my craft. I mean, it's kind of a unique way to grow up.
That was your school? That was your, like, education?
Yeah.
What was your, favorite Stephen King story? What was the big one that spoke to you when you were in that sort of early writing period, and why?
Oh, The Body, definitely. That's how I discovered Stephen King, because I was in love with the movie Stand By Me, and someone told me, there's a book called The Body, you should read it. And I read that, and man, just fucking took off like a rocket.
Yeah. Is there any other sort of Stephen King books that you sort of fell into after that? I mean, I know for me, it's only been this year that I've been really, really getting into Stephen King. I don't know why I put him off so long. Yeah, I don't know why I put him off so long, but now I've sort of had that gateway drug. I just can't stop.
The Talisman spoke to me a lot when I was living in the hotel, because it was about a kid my own age at the time, and he was also living at a hotel, and then he had to leave to save his mom from a disease. I just found that really relatable.
I
fucking got obsessed with his Dark Tower series. I read all 7 of his books in like a month.
Wow. That's hard going. Yeah.
I don't know how I did that. I did pretty much nothing but read them.
That's impressive.
Yeah. And do you have as we're on the subject of Stephen King, do you have like a favorite, an absolute favorite book now that sort of stands head and shoulders above the others?
Yeah, the one he wrote as Richard Bachman is called The Long Walk.
That's next on my list to read, actually. I just finished reading Rage. I've got like the Bachman.
Oh, bits. Yeah.
Yeah. With Rage, so how old were you when he wrote that? I think he was quite young. I was reading that and I was like, you know what? This is good. It's good to see like where he got his humble beginnings. And about like 20 pages in, I was like, oh, fuck, he was really good back then as well. Like, it's it's so good. But
I think he was 17 or 18.
Yeah. So what is it about The Long Walk that's really got to you?
Yeah, well, there's almost no background in it, which I love. I hate when exposition takes over. And it moves forward constantly. And the plot is super simple, but it's effective.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So,
I was going to say, so what is it about, because obviously Stephen King's been a bit of a bedrock in terms of your podcast, Castle Rock Radio. What was it that made you so, so passionate that you wanted to start up that podcast and get talking about Stephen King?
Okay, yeah. A while back, I did this challenge for Lit Reactor where I would read every single piece of short fiction he had written in 1 month and then write a column about it.
You like challenges,
Yeah. And as I was reading them, I kept talking to who is now my co-host for the podcast, Lily Michelle, just like explaining some of the wacky plots I had forgotten about. Like, for an example, he has one called The Cat from Hell. And that is about a hitman who is contracted to whack a cat. And at the end, the cat forces itself down the hitman's throat, and then...
Is this a film? Is this on the...
I think it was made into a short film, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just realized how much fun it was just to discuss the plots, and that's just how the podcast grew. Plus, I had been wanting to do a podcast for a while because I have a lot of anxiety when it comes to public speaking because of my speech impediment. So I thought that would be a good challenge to kind of break that.
I think it works. I mean, I've been podcasting for a little while now. When I listen back to those first ones, I don't think I'm particularly great now. But when I listen back to those first ones, I can just hear the improvement. I mean, I just been more comfortable talking. Dan is like incredibly confident anyway. So I don't think, in fact, the podcast has probably made you a little bit worse, Dan.
Probably for me. I'm much more of a face-to-face person, but I still can remember. Well, I still cringe at the early episodes of this podcast.
Yeah, it's a good habit to get into, I think. But your first episode of Castle Rock Radio, Max, was on the lawnmower. Why would you pick that story? That's such a bizarre, bonkers story. It's great, but it's,
that's exactly why. Right. And plus, I love the background with everything that happened with the film adaptation. I thought that was pretty interesting to talk about.
Yeah. So Stephen King did he even write a draft, or did he just sort of, because the film is nothing like the story.
No, he didn't even know it was made. He just randomly like stumbled across it, and it had nothing to do with anything he wrote. So he ended up suing the film production company to remove his name. And then he would hire private eyes to go to movie stores to make sure the movies didn't have his name on them. It was fucking nuts.
Yeah. So just to go back to the writing stuff then. So when you were in your training montage halfway through, and you'd were you developing any sort of writing sort of habits? How are you? Because I know a lot of people struggle to get their ass in the chair and to actually, you know, put fingers to the keyboard. I mean, how are you? What was your routine like back then?
Back then, I didn't have a routine. I really just had nothing else to do, because the hotel I lived in, it was located too far away for me to go to school. It was on the side of a highway. I couldn't walk anywhere. I kind of lost contact with all of my friends. So, and plus the website I had joined, it gave me a lot of motivation. Because I would want to constantly upload new things to see what everyone thought of it. It was a pretty fun experience. And I think writers need some type of group to get them going in the beginning.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's a lonely business.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So in terms of now you've been doing it for a little while now, do you have any sort of routines or habits built into place now?
I honestly don't. I just try to write when I can.
Yeah.
I think routines kind of damage you in the long run, because then you become dependent on them. Like, if something isn't exactly right, then in your mind you begin to believe, oh no, I can't write now.
Yeah,
I can feel that. Yeah, because I think I found that habits have been massively helpful in terms of actually getting the momentum going. But like you say, sometimes all it takes is you wake up 5 minutes later than you meant to, or you sit down sort of a little bit later than you plan to, and suddenly your head just throws it all out the window and thinks that you can't do your full lot, so why bother?
Yeah. I saw some people in the, I'm doing Nano at the minute, NaNoWriMo, and I saw some people in the Nano Facebook group. I think it was like 4 days in, and they were giving up because they'd not managed to write like 2 days of those 4 days. And they were like, I'm too far behind now. I was like, Jesus Christ.
Wow.
Just sit down and write. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a good thing we'll give me now.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. So Max, you've had a fair few short stories appearing in like various publications and that kind of thing. I'd love to try and delve into your opinion of sort of what makes a great little short story to send to magazines and that kind of thing. Is there any tips that you've got there for newer writers?
Oh, man. Yeah, I have a few. I mean, obviously it needs to be exciting. I notice a lot, like in the slush pile, people try to mimic scenes from movies that I've already seen. And people also fall under the...
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The illusion that prose is the same as a visual medium. Mm. And sometimes I can not be beneficial at all. The pacing is definitely something that needs to be concrete. It needs to keep me excited. Writers should keep in mind that we live with a cell phone attached to us constantly, and everything is just like a scroll away. So you have to make me want to keep reading, because I will so easily distracted. Why should we give a shit? You have to give us a reason to want to keep reading.
Yeah.
Openings will super important. Begin as late as you can, I would say.
Yeah.
As soon as it stops making sense, then that's when you need to begin.
The point where, like, I'm trying to think of a good example. So what I've been put into the habit of is sort of starting at the end and then looping a little bit back, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, because short stories, it's its own. I mean, we write a lot of novels, Dan, but like, how do you feel like short stories are their own medium, right? There's something very different about it to write a novel.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, well, not the same thing at all. I mean, a novel, you have a lot of time. Short story, it's like a punch to the face, strike and you're done.
Yeah.
But like, if you're writing a novel, I mean, it takes a lot of time. You can take the victim home, take your time with them. You have a whole week. Take a week vacation, do what you want. But a short story, it's like a mugging. You don't have a lot of time.
Yeah, get in there, get the wallet, and get out. I like it.
Yeah, it's definitely an underappreciated art form. I mean, I know a lot of people that they'll write short stories, and because they get recognition for their short stories, they suddenly jump to a novel, and suddenly they realize that there's a lot more work in that than his first thought. It's not just as easy as taking that short story and stretching it, because each story, in essence, will have its own lifetime, its own credibility of how far you can stretch that particular narrative. But I think it's something that you definitely work on that takes some doing. But is it short stories that you kind of tend to lean yourself towards more, or is it the bigger novels that you enjoy writing?
I kind of like writing novellas the most, the in-between.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not quite I'm not quite positive why. I think novels are sometimes long just for the sake of being long. Like they writers just will stretch them out because they think, well, I need a full length novel. No one's gonna take me serious. But with a short story, you just sometimes you don't have enough time to get everything in. With a novella, you can have a quick pace, but you also have some time to develop some good characterization, some decent plot twists. The pacing doesn't have to settle.
Yeah.
I guess you've got a bit more room to play with. It's almost like you can take that seed for a short story, but then have a bit more of a creative license with it.
Right.
And to be fair, some of the best stories that I have read have been novellas. It's that, because sometimes you don't want to sit and know that you've got 400 or 500 pages ahead. Sometimes you do just want to digest enough of a story that you can then move on and go on to the next one.
I think a lot of novels lately are actually just 2 or 3 novellas just smushed together.
Yeah.
Mm.
I see that a lot, like when books are constantly switching point of views and most of the point of views don't have anything to do with each other and they just kind of connect once in a while.
Yeah.
I am finding at the minute that is the one of the most common things that I'm seeing in recent novels is that POV change. And you're right. I think it's one of those things, but as I'm reading it, I'm going, if this is one person's perspective, which, you know, books 10, 20 years ago primarily are, this would be a lot shorter story. It's a good way to make your novel stretch and, I guess, to play more with other characters. But at the same time, sometimes it's not necessarily needed.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of like Game of Thrones sort of made everyone think, just go to a different
character. Can you imagine if it was all from Jon Snow's perspective?
I know. Actually, it might be quite a tight little story, that. But
yeah,
it's interesting. Max, so can you talk, I mean, so there's Dark Moon Digest and there's Perpetual Motion Machine Publishing. Is Perpetual Motion Machine Publishing like the imprint you built to publish Dark Moon Digest, or did it happen sort of the other way around? Or can you talk a bit about that?
So yeah, DMD has been around 7 years now. I got involved like in the second year as like an associate editor. It was founded by a man named Stan Swanson. And around, I would say, 2002, I decided to begin my own publishing company. I don't know why now. It was a stupid idea. But I'm stuck with it now. and I stuck with DMD as well. Myself and also Lori Michelle. She eventually took over as editor-in-chief of the magazine. And then Stan Swanson decided he was done with all publishing. He wanted to focus on country music, I think. So we bought the magazine from him and began publishing it under the PM&P name.
Well, okay, cool. It's a quarterly magazine, is that right?
Yeah.
Cool. And it's I've read a couple, actually. So it's got short stories, some essays and that kind of thing. It's really interesting. I think I'd like to do something like that at that point, but I mean, is it a lot of work? It looks like a lot of work getting different stories and articles together.
Yeah, it is. We have a whole team of / readers to help out, so that's good.
Cool.
But still, we do it every 3 months. Right.
Cool. And so people read the slush pile for you, and then do you have like the final say on what goes in there?
Yeah, they all do the votes, and then Lori, Michelle, and myself, we go through the ones who got the most votes, and we decide.
Yeah.
And sometimes, if I have like a few hours to spill, I'll just go through the whole slush pile and quickly reject a bunch of them, because sometimes it's pretty easy to tell if I'm going to reject them by like page one.
Yeah.
How many do you normally get in?
I have no idea. Hundreds.
Wow. Yeah.
I think we're still reading submissions from back in April.
Do you think it's made you a better short story writer? Like having to edit them?
Yeah, definitely. Mostly because I understand now what annoys me, so I try to avoid doing that.
Yeah. And you've got like a Patreon thingamajobly set up for PMM, is that right?
Yeah, we do as a Patreon. We use it. We began it because we thought it would be a good way for people to subscribe to the magazine. Because we do it, if you pledge $1 a month, then you get the digital magazine every time it comes out. And we have a bunch of other like levels you can choose from. There's a paperback subscription as well. But I noticed since we did the Patreon, a lot more people have subscribed than back when we just had a page on the website.
Interesting. So do you think
plus is, yeah, go ahead.
So do you think they found you through Patreon, or how are these new people coming to you?
I think it's just more convenient.
Right. Yeah. I guess it's like, I mean, how did you have it before? Did you just like have a landing page or something, or?
Yeah, we just have a landing page, but it's easy to post to social media. And plus, anytime someone who already has a Patreon account, people can pledge to them. If that account pledges to my account, then everyone who had ever pledged to the other account is emailed saying, "This cradle just pledged to PMMP.
Yeah,
maybe you should too." So it kind of branches out like that.
Yeah, and I saw Amanda Palmer tweeting to you today about it, which is quite cool.
Excuse me?
Sorry, I saw Amanda Palmer tweeting to you about it.
Oh, yeah. That was cool. I was hoping she would like retweet it, but nah, man, that didn't happen. Oh,
Amanda.
That's the whole reason I linked it. I was like, maybe. Maybe I can be sly.
Yeah, maybe get to send a link to Neil. That'd be interesting. cool, man. I mean, I don't know how much you want to go into the whole Dark Views thing. I was going to just sort of quickly touch on it and see if it's something you sort of wanted to delve into or not, because I know
I'm an open book about it, so okay. anything you want to know, I don't give a shit, fuck those guys.
So Dan, I don't know if you saw, so a little while ago a published company called Dark Views went bust, or they, you know, went solvent or whatever, they bankrupt or whatever they call it, and then they own the rights, they publish your novel The Nightly Disease, and then what happened? So they just didn't give you any, you like a year's worth of royalties for it or something?
Yeah, what happened was they published it in December, so almost a year ago now, and I never received royalties for it at all. And I think it was June, maybe it was May, we got everyone who had been published by him received an email saying he was stepping down to focus on tennis and he would begin doing limited publishing only. So the idea he had was anyone he had already published, they would either go out of print or they would be forced to sign a new contract with pretty shitty terms to it. The royalty rate was awful. I don't know why he decided we would have to sign new contracts. And then he said, and anyone he had already signed but hadn't published yet, they would receive the same contract they had signed. It would be fine. If anyone published before 2017, they would be removed or they would need to sign a new contract. Most of us said, fuck you, and we just took our rights back. He freaked out at this and stopped responding to anyone until a month later he sent out a newsletter to like his fan base complaining that he had tried to make the publishing company more viable, but because of 80% of his authors abandoned him, he was forced to file for bankruptcy. So basically he blamed us for leaving when he was already being a shithead.
But he was leaving to be a tennis man, right? Wasn't that
right?
Idea?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. he wanted to focus on instructing tennis. And until now he hadn't paid anyone any royalties for all of 17. So that's 6 months for me. I received nothing.
Okay.
And not
so
even
how do you deal with that situation? How do you move forward from that in terms of republishing your novel and going ahead?
Yeah. So what happened after that was he did do bankruptcy, and right now we're trying to settle it in the law. Yeah. So we're waiting. I guess it's going to cold. I don't know if it's going to be bolted at this point. Probably not. So what I did was I decided just to self-publish it through my own company, which is a lot easier sometimes. I've never self-published before. I didn't really want to, but I didn't really have a choice at this point. And so what was the question?
Well, I guess it'd just be interesting to – so you've kind of been forced to sort of self-publish and go like a bit more of an indie route. Would you – doing the whole thing with Dark Hues sounds kind of annoying and sort of – would you – if you could turn the clock back, would you just go ahead and self-publish Night of Disease or try and find another publisher or –
I would find if I didn't send it to Dark Views, I would rather just try to find a new press to release it. Probably maybe try to go the agent route.
Yeah.
Okay. I wouldn't.
And what is it that attracts you more to the agent to the route agent? Than the self-publishing route?
Yeah.
Well, I'm just finding a wider audience.
Yeah.
That's what's most important to me is trying to find a wider audience, trying to reach more people.
Yeah. Sounds cool, man. So, and the next novel we're going to write, are you going to try and find an agent and do the trad route for that?
The thing, I recently finished one. I'm not going to send it to an agent because it's not long enough. A lot of agents, they won't touch anything unless it's 60,000 volts and above.
Yeah.
And mine is not. So I'm reaching out to a few small presses I like. So maybe we'll see. I haven't really made up my mind. But the one I'm doing right now, I'm definitely going to try going the agent route like a dumbass.
Fair enough. I mean, would you not be interested in like self-publishing through Perpetual Motion Machine again?
I mean, I'm not opposed to it, but I would rather try to find a different method just because I don't know. I don't mind self-publishing at all.
Yeah.
Like I have no problems if someone does that. I just find it kind of gross if I do it because I'm afraid of somehow focusing more attention on my book than someone else I've published, if that makes sense.
Okay. Then that does make sense because you're publishing other people's books as well, right? So and I can understand that because then it would be like if you publish your own book as well, how would that appear to your other authors? And it seems, I know what you mean, it kind of seems a little bit strange.
It would be like the coach's kid always pitching.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
so that's why I try to avoid it.
Go on, Dan.
Is that something that you considered? Was it a case of when you started the company, was it intentionally to find these new authors? And was it something that you considered that you would have to find alternative methods to publish your own work?
No, I had never considered I would publish my own fiction and all the company's name.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. With the Nightly Disease, I just really didn't have a choice because no one's going to want a book that was already published.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. And then what's the reaction been like to republishing it?
I mean, pretty good. We gave it a new jacket, a big improvement from the last one, I think. We've done a few readings of it. I mean, I think it's going okay.
Yeah.
I haven't really done a lot of promotion with it for the reasons I mentioned. I'm trying to focus on books by different people that I published.
Yeah.
I kind of just threw it out to the void and like, okay, let's see what happens.
Public readings. I don't know if I could. I mean, Dan, I've seen you do a really good one. I'm not too sure I could do it. How did you find the public reading?
Oh, me?
Yes, yeah,
I was invited by a friend, Ilg Pruitt, who wrote a book called What We Reckon. He's a crime writer. I drove out to Dallas and did one at this bookshop/pub called The Wild Detectives. That was just last week, and that was fun. I was super nervous. It was the second reading I've done. I had to get pretty drunk beforehand. I mean, just doing a podcast, I get pretty anxious about, but yeah, reading, it's not easy.
Dan, I know you're quite good at that kind of, have you got any advice for people out there who are still a little bit nervous about that kind of stuff?
know your material through and through before you go on stage. I think it's quite easy to have one or two flicks through and think you've got it, but the only way really to know that you've got that confidence is to go up there and just know the material through and through.
Yeah.
And I think it's more try, just be yourself more than anything else. It's if you try and recreate or mimic someone else that you've seen in a certain style, you're just going to come off as fake and people are going to read it. And also, I'd also say that a lot of the times when people are staring at you and they look bored, look at your own face when you're listening to other people speak. Because not a lot of times do people look that enthusiastic when they're listening to people speak. So it's not something that I take personally if there are a lot of people with sort of chins on their hands or just kind of...
I would ban phones. I would take like a whip round. Yeah, I'd take a whip round with my hat and just say, pop your phones in here. You can pick up on the way out.
Stick them in the twat bag.
Exactly, yeah. Have you got any more readings coming
but
up?
Do you find...
Sorry, Dan.
Oh, mine was kind of going to tag onto that. Was how do you find that helps you in terms of publicity?
I mean, I don't know how well it helped me. The place was pretty packed, but it was a small place. So, besides publicity wise, I don't think it did that much. But I think it's fun experience once you get it over with and done.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Because it kind of, for me, that goes hand in hand with author signings. Like, I don't see a great deal in terms of reaching new audience.
Yeah.
But reaching anyone from your audience. But at the same time, it's quite nice to have those experiences where you do get to speak to people directly.
Yeah, it's nice to get out of the house sometimes.
Yeah.
But I agree, though. I definitely realize you really have to practice the reading beforehand. The night before I drove to Dallas, I booked a night shift at a hotel, which is what my book, The Nightly Disease, is about. And I was practicing the reading, like, at the front desk. And the scene involved the night guy yelling at a guest and getting into this argument. And I wasn't paying attention. I realized someone was standing at the front desk waiting to get a toothbrush. It was pretty awkward. So when you do practice, maybe pay attention to the surroundings you're standing in.
Yeah, know the room.
Yeah, good shout.
So, okay, so Max, a couple more questions before we go on to the the quickfire round. So if all of your work got lost to the fire and you didn't have a proper backup solution in place, but you managed to save one single piece of your work, be that a novel, short story, podcast, or even a doodle, which piece of work would you like to save?
I would say the book I'm writing right now, because it is not published.
Okay. And would this be the kind of the one piece of work that sort of best represents you? Where could people go if they want to, you know, get a good taste of Max? That sounds a bit wrong, but where can they, if they want to get a good lick on you, where could they go?
Like the book that best represents me, you mean?
Yeah.
I would just say pick up The Nightly Disease. That is the best thing I've written. Cool. Definitely.
Cool. And so what's next for PMMP and Max Booth?
PMMP will about to release Joe McKinney's collection Speculations, and right now I'm reading submissions for a new anthology called Lost Films, which I hope to get out by August. And writing wise, nothing I can really talk about at the moment. No news. I have one book finished that I'm shopping around, and I'm halfway through a new book. Nothing too exciting.
Cool. Okay, man. Cool. Well, that's Dan. Are you ready for the quickfire round?
I am so ready.
Max, are you ready for the quickfire round?
Yes, I am. Cool. Let's do it.
Okay, Dan, do you want to go first?
Go for it. Okay, Max, what was the second to last book that you read?
It was The Big Novel by James Ellroy.
Celebrity chef and all-round angry Scotsman Gordon Ramsay insults you to your face for a whole hour. Do you enjoy it overtly or secretly?
Secretly. I'm too shy.
What's your favorite alcoholic beverage?
Whiskey.
Favorite US city?
Chicago.
What was the first film you ever loved?
Coneheads.
That was nice. The one person you'd want to meet?
Stephen King.
You pirate music?
Yeah.
Honest. Okay. Favorite creator who's not a writer?
I would go with Mike Mignola.
Oh, cool.
You're in the cinema waiting for the film to come on. Bad news, it's that film that you hate. What's that film called again?
That film is called White Chicks.
My fiance nice. Loves that film. Okay. And the last one, where can we follow you in your work?
Talesfromthebooth.com.
Cool. Okay, so just a quick thanks to Disaster Piece for the intro and outro music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to the listeners for listening. Thanks to our patrons over at patreon.com/forkandcleaver. Thanks to Dan, my co-host, for being here. Without you, I would be alone. Thanks, Dan.
You're welcome. Thank you, Luke. Thank you, Max.
Yeah, just again, thanks for coming on, Max. I've been sort of following you on Twitter for a while. You're very humorous, so everyone should go follow Max on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle again?
Give me your teeth.
Give me your teeth. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. yeah, I guess we'll end on that. Give me your teeth, and thanks again for coming on.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.